Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome to my home right here on this Sunday night. Beautiful, beautiful Sunday evening here in Houston, Texas. And as you look out my window here, you can tell the sun's going down, but it looks like, what is it, next week? Or that we're going to have the clock spring forward. So we'll have a different little outlook through the windows of the home next Sunday night. As we do with any live radio show, sometimes things go absolutely perfect, just like in life. And then sometimes you hit a speed bump or a brick wall and you don't know what to do. But the beautiful people at BBS Radio and I have been talking because we have not heard from our guests this evening. What I'm going to do is let you know what's going on, who we have coming up in the few coming weeks, coming up in the future of the program live. And I'm going to let you know a little bit of things that I was going to share with you that's happened to me in my own life this week that I wanted to just share with you. And then if I see that our guest is on, we're going to go right live to that guest and do our show like we normally do. If not, we are going to replay. So we're going to go about 8 minutes of me letting you know how to get in touch with us here at Breaking the Silence and BBS Radio. And there's two or three different ways to get involved tonight. You can be right on the Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page, and we are live there right now. We are also on the BBS radio station going around the world. And so many countries, and we don't probably countries we can't even name because we don't even know how to pronounce them, but it's going all the way around the world. You can get involved at 888-627-6008, or you can text me right here, and that is 832-396-6525. And I just got a message while I did that from our guest. He's logging in right now. So I just want to kind of warn Thomas and Doug and Don that he is logging in to the program right now. So be ready for him to be coming on. And we're going to go ahead and do our radio show like we normally do. And he'll be coming in just like normal. And I'm excited about our guest tonight. You will want to make sure you listen in and hang with us tonight. You know, the next couple of weeks, I was watching on BET, the Black Entertainment Network, television network, Tyler Perry's show, Assisted Living, just to see Aretha Thomas. She was a guest last week, and she's going to be a guest in a couple more weeks coming on the program again. So it was kind of neat to see her on TV, and she's going to be a guest coming back on. We also have Marlena Compston coming on. We have Dave Pelzer coming on the program, and we have some other great people coming on in the month of March and April that you will not want to miss. So be with us and join in, and don't miss every Sunday night live right here from Houston, Texas. So Thomas is interacting with Seth right now. So we're trying to get on. Okay. So I tell you what, you're going to find out from our guest this evening before we bring him in that this is so true in life. And I've learned that the hard way in my own life that a few things that I need to just share with you that shouldn't be a surprise to some of us, that let's face it, life's not easy. Life is tough. Life's hard. Life throws things at us that we wasn't expecting. We get blindsided with sickness. We get blindsided with diseases. We get blindsided with betrayals. We get blindsided and hard rock thrown in our face sometimes with a brick, with how people treat us. And life's not fair. And in that, you think if you just endure, buckle up, don't cry, and keep tough, that life's never going to be tough on you. But I want to let you know that's just not true. Strength comes from not winning. Strength comes from losing sometimes and handling life face on, head on, in a rough way, decides what and who we are really made of. So when life tries to push us down, fight against that. Keep pulling up. Keep doing things that you know you should be doing, and keep doing things right and diligent. And I think our guest tonight is going to be able to share with you about that. And I personally believe that if you want something to be different that was never different in your life to begin with, we need to stop doing the same thing over and over and pretend like things are going to get better, because it doesn't work that way. If you want something to be different in your life tomorrow, you better darn sure start doing something different in your life to cause that domino to fall down and to be stronger for you to begin with. I honestly believe, and I've read in our guest book today, that sometimes life happens and we can be to the fact that I am glad it happened to me, because it made me who I am and it helped and brought me to who I can become. And I think that is so, so important, that anything that in life is worth having, it's worth fighting for, because this life isn't easy. And from day one, our guest tonight, and I'm not going to give any more fluff, because I wasn't going to do any fluff tonight anyway, because I know our guest has so much to offer tonight with wisdom. So, Thomas, bring this beautiful guest in tonight, Seth, and I want to share with him to the world. And, Seth, good evening. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, sir. How you doing?
Good. I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Pronounce your last name for me. G-E-H-L-E. How do you pronounce that?
Gale, yeah.
Oh, Seth Gale.
Yes, sir.
I would have pronounced it Gailey. Okay, so it's Seth Gale. You folks, write this name down and write down Beyond the Shadows, because you will want to get this book before the evening is out. Seth, it's an honor to have you on. And I want to tell you what. I was a fan of yours, because my wife sent me a TikTok, a YouTube or something. And she said, you ought to have, listen to this guy. And she showed it to me on the phone. And I listened to a couple of your raw dissertations and tapings that you share with the world. And I would imagine you get a lot of views. And it just hit me right between the eyes. And she looked over at me and she said, you think he'd want to be on the program? I said, I don't know, but I'm going to try. And I'll be doggone if here we are. And it's an honor to have you with us. Thank you for being with us.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. Yeah, I've had a few solid interviews that have kind of done well. And a lot of people have cut. That's how most people found my story, or found me, I guess, was through my Soft White Underbelly interview on YouTube. And so, yeah, I appreciate it, man. Thank you for reaching out.
Well, this is great. I tell you, you have you're a speaker. You travel the country, committed to empowering others, and I'm just taking this off the back of your book, to embrace that warrior spirit. And you have that warrior spirit, not only in life, but you fought for our country. And you did that Afghanistan trip Was that once or twice, Seth, that you went over and defended our country and helped protect them?
Just one time, yeah,
One time.
2019.
And how long were you in the military?
I was in the army for, I was in the army for about 9 years,
9 years.
somewhere around, yeah, close to 9 years. Yep.
Fantastic. And I think after reading the book, I've read through it, and I have all of these notes that I want to. I don't have prepared questions. I never do. I just read through the book and I write down a quote or something that impacted me while I was reading it, and then I just want to share with you and get your insight on that. Seth, for people that haven't heard your story, share with us what you do, what you're passionate about, and really what you want. And we're going to end up going there, drilling down deep into your past, what you want the experience of your past life to be able to propel you to where tomorrow in your future. And how do you use that negativity and those bad things into helping so many people out today?
Yeah, I mean, so I guess right now, I'm a speaker and author, so I travel and speak, sell my book, and then present my story to help other people, kind of depending on the setting, handle whatever situations they're going through. I'll actually be speaking at a conference here in a couple of days in Kentucky, and I'll be speaking to the dispatching teams behind the 911 calls in Kentucky, and so I have a specific message crafted for that audience as it relates to my story. And so yeah, I'm just trying to use my story as like a conduit of inspiration or motivation, or letting people know that sometimes it's the message is, hey, you're not alone. You're not the only one that's kind of going through things. There are a lot of people out there like you. So that's what I'm doing now. I guess a little bit more about me. I'm a husband, I'm a father. I've got two young little babies, and I've got a third one on the way, so we're pretty excited about that.
Congrats.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm an ultra runner. I've run seven ultra marathons, compete in jiu-jitsu. I've won some pretty cool like national awards in the construction industry. And as of late, I'm a best-selling author. So my book just hit number one in like six categories on Amazon. And then so did my book's done very well since I published it, and I'm just fortunate, I'm lucky and blessed to have the opportunities that I have, now. And I wouldn't be here without the people that have supported me along the way. So that's a little bit about me now. I guess as it relates to my story, I'll just to be brief, I grew up in a broken home, surrounded by drugs and violence, single mother, no father. My father spent most of my life in prison. Due to the circumstances of my childhood and my home life, I was molested at 5 years old by a teenage kid. It was a babysitter's son. And then eventually, from the ages of 10 to 16, I was molested and sexually abused by another man outside of my home for about 6 years.
Is that Mondo?
That is, yes, sir. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So yeah, we called him Mondo. He's in the book and wrote about him. And that's really the heaviest portion of the story, was dealing with all that. And simultaneously, Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday, I was dealing with Mondo. I was being abused and molested by him. And then Monday through Friday, I was going home to a house of drugs and violence and just poverty, I guess. And just a broken home, man. It was just a tough childhood for sure. And despite all that, I've come out on the other end a relatively successful human, I would say. I've done some incredible things. That I'm, like I said a minute ago, I'm just lucky and blessed to be able to have done. And because of that, it is almost like a responsibility of mine now to share my story, because I know that there are others out there just like me who are in a bad place in life and need to know that, either they're not alone, or, things could be better, things could be worse. But, we have this opportunity to do the best that we can, I guess in closing with all that, I would say, although my story is tragic and it is heartbreaking, it's hard to listen to, it's hard to read. The tragedy, in my opinion, does not lie in the story. The tragedy in most people's lives, I think, is this untapped potential to go and live the most beautiful life possible, right? Despite our circumstances. So is this sad? Is it heartbreaking? Yes, it is. But I think it's much more sad, much more heartbreaking when we fail to reach and live like the best human experience, you know, because of those. So that's what I'm trying to do now. I'm trying to help people find that untapped potential, find that place in their heart where they can forgive and forget and move on and decide to live a better life.
When you decided, hey, I'm going to put my life down on paper and I'm going to bleed on the page and I'm going to share the intimate, and you share like I did in mine, pretty raw details. Some people may go, oh, wait, I want to turn the page real quick because that's too raw. But no, that's what life's all about. It's about truth and rawness. And when it hits those nerves and those heartstrings, it gets our attention. When you started putting that all down on paper, and you said, what can I call this book? Why did you pull out Beyond the Shadows?
So the title is The Strength Beyond the Shadows. But yeah, it's just it's interesting. When I started writing it the first time, I don't know if I actually put this in the book, but I started writing my book like 3 times, and I deleted it 3 times because I didn't think it would matter. I didn't think anybody would read it. I didn't think anybody would care. But when I first started writing it, and like I said, I can't remember if this is in the book, but I've always felt like my entire life I've been running from something, and there's always been something that's kind of been behind me, or just like almost like a shadow, just like breathing, and it knows my past, it knows my life, it knows my history, and therefore, because of that cloud or that shadow, whatever you want to call it, I couldn't execute or complete or win or achieve, accomplish anything in life because that thing was always there. It was always reminding me who I was, where I came from, you know, the kind of life that I have. I don't have family. Like all, it was a constant reminder and a shadow of all of these things that followed me around for my entire life. And so Strength Beyond the Shadows is more of like exposing, you know, exposing some light, bringing some attention to that pain and that suffering in order to get through it and to get over it, to overcome it. So that's kind of what that, I guess, title resembles.
Did you hold all of this in for a while before you was able to process it and finally let it out? Because sometimes for men, that's why I'm sure your speaking calendar is full, mine is too, because there's not that many of us men out talking about being sexually abused, because it's a tough wall to break down and to admit. Did you have any of that time? Like, it took me 35 plus years. Did it take any time for you to say, hey, wait, I'm not going to let anybody know? And then if you
Well,
did, when did you finally let out?
yeah, I mean, I knew that one day I would tell my story ever since I was a young man. I mean, I don't know if I talk about it in the book, but I usually talk about it whenever I speak, is that there was a very profound day when I was about 10 years old where I knew that one day I would end up telling my story in some form or fashion. And it's truthfully, I believe it was when I read a book, A Child Called It, and I remember reading that book and thinking to myself, like, man, like this guy wrote a book and I understand what this guy went through as a kid. Like, I'm kind of dealing with some of these things at home as well. So I think I knew one day I would write a book. And then a couple of years later, I found out that I found a motivational speaker. His name's Eric Thomas. And I saw him speaking on YouTube. And I was like, okay, one day I'll be a motivational speaker. Like, if this guy's story means that much to me, then my story will mean so much more to other people. So it's very interesting. I had these 2 days in my memory from being a child of like these moments of where I knew that one day I would tell my story. And in my adulthood, I never had any problems telling my story as far as my mother goes, like growing up in a broken home, drugs, violence. I could talk about those things all day long because they were. It's not shame. I'm not was never ashamed of those things, you know. I was never embarrassed about those things as an adult, but I never told anybody about the sexual abuse. Never told a soul. I mean, I reported the guy, and then because I was a minor, you know, my name wasn't put out in the public or anything like that, and so it was completely held and wrapped under wraps for, you know, for 15 years. I mean, I reported him when I was 15 years old. I'm 30 years old now, and I just started telling my story almost a year ago today. And that, telling my story for the first time was incredibly hard. It was, yeah, it was very, very difficult. And I think maybe the hardest part about it was there was some shame and embarrassment with it, but also just trying to process everything while telling the story, I think that's one of the things that I've gotten out of telling my story so many times now is I process so much of what's happened, how it's affected me in different ways. And so now it's pretty easy for me to talk about it and tell it now. But yeah, I mean, I didn't plan on, I knew, like I said, I knew one day I would tell my story. I just didn't know when. And that was hard. Like the initial piece was hard, telling people what happened to you as a young man.
One of the parts of the book that really got my attention, and I have people on here every week. Matter of fact, Dave Pelzer, the Child Called It author, has been on a couple times and be on in a couple more weeks.
Oh, wow.
A great guy, great friend, and he's just good people, really down to earth. And one thing that really caught my attention when I was reading yours is said that you wasn't so concerned about the people in the white van or the creepy guy in the trench coat. It's the one who smiles in the crowd that you have to watch out for. What do you mean by that? Because that is so true. That is absolutely factual. It's not the guy handing candy out at the park in the long trench coat like we were told as kids. Tell me what you, because you hit the nail on the head. And every parent that's listening tonight around the world needs to hear that. It's the one that's smiling in the crowd. Give me
Yeah.
more insight on that.
Yeah, so well, statistically speaking, 78% of the time or more, it is somebody in your immediate household. So somebody inside the walls that you live in is abusing your child. That's 78% of the time. Over 98% of the time, it's somebody in your immediate circle of trust, right? So church, coaches, schools, whatever. It's somebody in your community that you trust and that you know is doing it. So the statistics really speak for themselves and kind of speak to that sentence or that statement quote in the book. Mondo, the guy that abused me, he was the life of the party. Everybody loved him, and it didn't matter where he went. He was, everybody wanted to talk to him. Everybody wanted to hug him. He was the funny one. He was right about everything. Like he was the center of attention. He held all the conversation. He had a couple different friend groups, and I knew all those friends and those friend groups. But even like when eventually he would eventually meet my grandparents, and so when he met my grandparents took me in, he ended up meeting my grandparents, and he was even at my house, he was the one that was making people laugh and smile and all of those things. Oddly enough, the only place that he was never that person was at his own family's gatherings, which is very interesting. It kind of shows to the it speaks to the fact that he was this antisocial, like extrovert, outcast person. But in certain groups, he could be a social butterfly in those certain groups in order to, to hide behind this mask. And that's what they do, It's people, it's sad. People, it's sad that you have to watch your kids so closely, right? And you would never want to assume that your brother or your sister is going to do that to your child, is going to abuse your child. But it happens. It happens all the time. And the people that are closest to them have the most access. They have the most trust. They have, that child is going to have a much harder time reporting mommy or daddy or uncle or grandma or grandpa than they are some random person who touched them weird or did something weird, So that's another piece of it. It's very complicated, but the closer you are with that child, the easier it is to manipulate them and to convince them and to do certain things with that child. And that's just the nature of it. And they know it, the pedophiles out there, they know it, which is why they do what they do. They build the trust. They build, there's so much chat that's been circulated from internet chats to text messages of these people who target children. And it's almost like a playbook is out there now where they know that the child that's neglected or maybe not getting enough attention or has a single parent, they know that that child is a target child. And as long as they warm up to that child and as long as they give that child some affection or attention, they know that they can eventually convince that child to do certain things. And a lot of this has all been recorded, via text. They've caught people doing this. And so, yeah, the guy in the crowd is the one that you have to worry about. He's unsuspecting, do people get snatched up off the sidewalk? Yeah, they do. Do kids still get kidnapped? Yes, they do. But we're so worried about these people like outside of the home versus the ones that are in our communities wanting to spend time with our kids. Anywhere, if you want to find bad people, you want to find people that want to hurt kids, they go wherever the kids are. So wherever there's a collection of kids, whether it be a school, a church, some sort of community, after school program, whatever it is, wherever there are kids, like that's where they are hiding, And so it's sad, but that's just the truth.
Yeah, on the other side of this, we only take one commercial break. We're going to take it now. But on the other side of this break, I want to go into, do you feel as we go through that process of Mondo and how he approached, how he confided in you and you confided in him, and then it got from, are you cold, to sit on my lap underneath the blanket, to now be in my bed, to now let me open. Sorry, I accidentally touched you. I want to walk through those steps because I think it's important, Seth, that the people that's listening to the program can see that this was a classic grooming. And I want to know, as you look back on it, was it that way from moment one? And we're going to talk about that right after this commercial break. 888-627-6008. If you want to call and talk to Seth right now, you have a comment or a question, you read his book, or you want to get in touch with him, you can call right now and Thomas will patch you right through. 888-627-6008. We'll be right back in about a minute and 15 seconds. Hang with us.
Get ready for a life-changing journey. From the best-selling author of Shattered by the Darkness and When the Dark Clouds Come, Dr. Gregory Williams is back with his highly anticipated third book, Embracing Your Scars, learning how to turn life's pain into life's power and purpose. Have you ever wondered how to transform your struggles into strength? Do you want to stop hiding behind the pain, the heartache, and instead learn how to turn those scars into the very fuel that propels you towards greatness? If you do, then this book is for you. In Embracing Your Scars, Dr. Williams shows you how to take the negative experiences of your past and turn them into the very source of your future success. Don't miss out, because your transformation begins here. The book is available soon on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, and wherever great books are sold.
Welcome back. And the author of Strength Beyond the Shadows is with us this evening. And I tell you what, Seth, the way that you described Mondo and the process and the steps, do you think this was something that he had done previously with some of these other boys that was over to play these video games at his home? Or was you the one and only? Or did you, I noticed you said somebody had slept with him in his bed periodically when you were spending weekends with him. What was your perception as a young child? And then now that you look back on it, can you see that this was absolutely a blueprint that they use all the time, these predators?
Yeah, so at the time I thought I was the only one, and which is common. I thought that I was the only one. I didn't assume that it was happening to anybody else, and for good reason, because I was at his house every single weekend. So when I started hanging out with him at 10 years old, I was there every single weekend. So if anybody else was going to be there, like I would see them and know them. The only other person initially was my friend who introduced me to Mondo, my friend Jacob in the story. And but even then, I didn't assume that Jacob was dealing with anything. I think that anything had happened to him. Because Mondo and I related on a different level. Jacob, come to find out that as an adult, Mondo, or I found out later on, I found out when I was 15 when I reported him that he did abuse Jacob as well. But I didn't know this about Jacob until recently, last year actually. I was talking to him, and I didn't know about his life prior to me meeting him. I thought he had like a normal life, normal mom and dad, normal home family, even though I was at his house and stuff. I just never really understood his home life and his past. And it turns out it was rather tragic and very much so like mine in just different ways. And that's his story to tell. But to answer your question, it was very blueprint. It was very like game plan.
And Mondo is how much older than you? You're 10 years old. You're going to his house playing video games, spending the weekend with him because of the disruption in your own home. And that was the place for you to go that you thought was safe. How old was Mondo when you first met it when you were 10?
He was about 30 years old or
Oh,
so,
wow.
30, 32. Yeah, he was about 32 probably. Yeah.
Red flag for parents, right?
Certainly. Yeah, certainly should be, right? Yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, a 10-year-old hanging out with a 15-year-old, it should be a red flag, I mean, there's just a massive difference between a kid who's 15 and a kid who's 10. Even you could even look at 12 to 10, like there's maybe not maybe maybe the 12 is maybe pushing it, but the point is like kids are so malleable and impressionable. It's so important that they're hanging out with kids their own age, because all it takes is just a few years of an age gap, and this child maybe has a phone or the internet or whatever it is, and they want to push it off into this little child, So, but especially when you talk about adults, and it doesn't matter what the adult says or what the child says, there's no reason why any adult should be wanting to spend extra time alone with your child or any time alone with your child. They want to take your child out on a date, or they want to, a friendly little like Valentine's or whatever kind of date or movie or whatever it is. If it's your, I mean, it just doesn't matter if it's your brother, your sister, and they want to take them out, or like, you've got to be very careful with these kind of things, because they can get out of hand very quickly. And that's what happened with Mondo. It was this, to me, it was this innocent friend that I had, and then I'm sure, now, especially now as an adult, the more I know about it, that he had other plans in mind, in which he proceeded to execute on.
And how did that progress? I mean, it's come over to play video games, pizza, soda pop, a little bit of freedom, being in, having fun, and then all of a sudden.
So yeah, at first it was just pizza, pop, and video games, right? Every kid's like favorite thing to do. And there was no rules, so you go to your friend's house and there's always rules. Like mom or dad comes in at 10 o'clock at night and tell you it's time to go to bed, stop eating all the snacks. With Mondo, there was no rules. It was just, he would order whatever you wanted, get whatever you wanted, eat whatever you want, drink whatever you want. And it was awesome. The initial steps, I would say, to where he began to make probably some progress, for lack of a better word, was when he asked me about my life at home, where I had a single mother, she was abusive, she was violent, I had two sisters. I was very smart in school, I was a straight A student, but I was also bullied a lot. I didn't have my nice clothes. In fact, I had shoes that had holes in them. And Mondo would reciprocate all of those same things about his own home experience as a child. So he would tell me that he had experienced everything that I had as a child. And so, truthfully, he was the only person in the world that could relate to me in any aspect. As far as I was concerned, like nobody knew what it was like to be me growing up in this broken home with like all of these bad things going on. And it was just tough. And so when I met Mondo, he was the first person who had ever gone through anything like that. And therefore, I began to trust him a lot more. Over the course of, maybe the next few weeks, his apartment was always cold. And so I remember one weekend being up there, and just being cold, and he had a blanket, and he just asked me if I wanted to get under the blanket with him, you know, if I wanted to warm up, and I did, and I got up on his lap, and he's a massive guy, and so I sat in his lap, and I remember laying on his chest, and it was warm, and it was comforting, and this is where like the importance of a father plays, because I had never been held by a man before, like I'd never been held or hugged or loved. You know, so when you feel that for the first time, I mean, I'm 30 years old now, and when my men friends tell me they love me, or I get a hug from one of my friends that are men, like it means so much to me. The men that are in my life that are mentors to me, they mean so much to me, and part of that is probably due to the fact that I've never had a father in my life, right? So I just there's that desire to be loved by another man. As a man, you know, as a father, as a brother, like that brotherhood feeling. So I felt that at, you know, 10 years old for the first time, and it felt good just to be embraced by somebody, you know. And it's just it's a slow burn. Like what these guys do is just a slow burn. It's not like this, you're not just jumping into the fire. It's just a slow, steady burn that eventually you don't even realize it. And next thing you know, you're all like blistered up, right? Because you've just been sitting here and cooking. So, and that's what they do. And so he puts his hand on my hip, and he's kind of like holding me, and his hand falls off my hip and hits me on the butt. He apologizes. I don't think anything of it. I say it's okay, and like not a big deal. And then that's when he put his hand on my butt. And at that moment, like I knew it was wrong, and I just froze up. And he says, "So this is okay, right?" And so from that point forward, I froze up when he initially did that, and I kind of just like accepted it. And so from that point forward, you are in this cycle of gaslighting yourself, where you're telling yourself like, this isn't actually happening. I'm not actually going through this. You know, that wasn't weird, or he didn't mean to do that. You're gaslighting on one end, and then on the other end, you're being manipulated by him as well. And so it's just hard, man. You're quite literally stuck between a rock and a hard place, and you're trying to find out how do you get out of this thing, you know? And then over the course of time, he would slowly, you know, it was just small acts and gestures that he would do to violate me. One of the things I talk about, this is a very good example of testing the water, so to speak. I was at his house one weekend. He called me to sit to get come climb into his lap, and it was only me and him there. And he leaned forward and he grabbed my shorts and ripped my shorts down suddenly, like out of nowhere. And I think this was probably the first time that he had seen me naked. And he rips my shorts and underwear down, and I pull them back up, and I'm standing there, and I just started crying. I remember being so embarrassed and like insecure about this. And he says to me, he's like, "You know what's wrong? Like what's wrong? Like, why are you crying?" And he's like, "Did I upset you? You know?" And like, "Yes, that you know, that scared me, and that was embarrassing, and I didn't want you to see me naked like that." And he held me, and then he comforted me, and he told me like, "Hey, it's okay. Like you don't have anything to be embarrassed about around me. Like you can trust me. Like I'm not, you know." And so what it is, looking back on it, it was this tactic to tear me down, to make me extremely vulnerable. Right, just to like love bomb me on the other side of that. You see this in domestic violent relationships. The man punches the woman in the face, woman is sad and she wants to leave, and then the man says, "Hey, I'm so sorry, like I didn't mean to do that. I love you." They love bomb them, and I'll change and it won't happen again, and you know, all these nice things. And so then the woman's like, okay, he's gonna change, you know. And so that's what I did. And I mean, I was just 10 years old. You can't win that fight at 10 years old. You might be able to do it as an adult. But at 10 years old, man, I mean, it's terrifying. And so I just accepted what he had said, and it just from that point forward, it just got worse and worse and worse, you
When did
know.
he start telling you, Seth, that he loved you and was in love with you? Was that to
Yeah.
rebuild another trust violation where he crossed the borderline and then wanted to rebuild it back real quick to build that trust? Hey, trust me, I love you, I'm in love with you. Was that in that same time frame as that?
Yeah, I think that in that situation might have been the first time he told me that he did love me, and that was within 3 months of knowing him, you know. And so, yeah, that was relatively quick. And then a lot of the like, "I'm in love with you," and I love you, and a lot of like the sick, kind of weird, romantic kind of things he would say to me would follow the depression episodes and the suicide episodes and these very like angry moments that he would have. I mean, it was an emotional roller coaster whenever I was with him. He was either, very pissed off about life in general, or whatever he would be want to be mad about, and then I would show affection and love, to make not in any weird affectionate way, but just to say like, hey man, like what's going on, like what's wrong, I'd give him some kind of attention, and then he would respond with like a massive like love bomb, right, where he's like, you're the only thing in the world that matters to me, and I love you so much, and it would just. It started about 3 months, and I mean, it just took off very quickly. By the time I was probably 13, 12, 13 years old, he was talking about having a full-blown relationship with me, and that we just had to wait until I was 18, and then, we wouldn't have to hide anything anymore.
Is this when the control of power came across when you were he would go to bed? He always ended up being tired early because he had him in his mind. He wanted to go to bed to get you in bed with him. And then he started beating on the wall while you were playing video games. And that was basically what your call, time for you to come in there. You could hear the anger with the way he was beating on the wall, right?
That started pretty early, probably 6 months to a year.
Control,
Yeah.
power.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, the control and the power was, within 4 or 5, probably 4 or 5, 6 months, yeah. And then I would say, within 6 months to a year, I mean, it was to the point of like, it was sickening. Like, it was almost like I could feel it pulling on my body, just his manipulation. So it's incredible what you can do with like a little bit of psychological torture. It's incredible what you can get people to do and get them to behave a certain way or to do certain things, and that's what he was doing.
I thought for me, one of the most powerful points was when you so eloquently and very raw talked about him using the word crucial. Is that the word? Well,
Yes,
that's
sir.
crucial. And then this police officer that I ended up wanting to talk about, Officer Couples, uses that very word to nail the nail in his coffin, because when Mondo heard that word, he knew he was screwed, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, the whole crucial thing, very, very dark story, so I don't want to cross the line on the show, but I guess that originated from being 12 years old, and he had me performing oral sex on him, and to which he eventually ejaculated, and it hit me in the face. I wrote about this in a book, and when it hit me in the face, he laughed at me, and he says that was crucial, and you couldn't make this stuff up because this is stuff that you'd see in a movie. Everything that you see that could happen in a grooming situation, like you said earlier, it's like a classic case. And this was one of those things where he could poke at me in public. He could poke at me in different places to let me know, like, he violated me before, in front of all and all these people, like, they don't know, but, me and him know. And there's an interesting I don't know, you probably know who Clark Fredericks is, but he's one of my like role models, like absolute heroes. He's the reason why I came out and told my story. And Clark has a scar on his I believe it's on his belly or his chest from he had a surgery, open heart surgery as a child. And the guy that raped him always wanted to touch that scar. And so like for Clark's like crucial thing, it was always being in public, and this guy would give Clark a nickel to touch his scar or to see his scar. And so they resemble one another in that sense, right? Like there's this like vulnerability, or there's this thing that they have that they want from you or that they like about you, and they just they'll do it in public. Like they'll say that in public, And so that's what he did. And I actually had completely forgotten about that story, to be totally honest. I totally forgot that that had happened until I went back and met Chad Couples last year. So when I went back and met Chad Couples in Ohio, I found him. I'm sure we'll get to this in a second, but I ended up, going up to Ohio and sat down and had an interview with him. And Chad started talking about that day when he showed up at the hospital. And I asked him, I stopped him and I said, "Hey, I want you to be as real, as raw. I want you to tell me all of the details because I want to remember everything." And that was the first story he told. And I had completely forgotten about it. And so when he had said it, I mean, I almost stopped the interview. I almost was like, "All right, we're done. Like, cut the cameras. We're not doing this." But I kind of sat back and for a minute, and I said, "You know what? We're gonna sit in this for a second, and we're gonna freaking heal. We're gonna process this, and we're gonna get through this shit." And that's what I did. And yeah, and Chad would eventually tell me that's how I found out about that, where Chad was interrogating him, and said, "Hey, well, this is gonna be crucial." And then right when he says that, Mondo asked for a glass of water, and then basically to a detective, that's essentially means, hey, they want to talk. Their throat's drying up. They're getting nervous. They want to talk.
Yeah, it sounds like he handled that interview. That this officer, if I remember right, this is one of the videos that you share, is it not, Seth, where you really, I mean, your tears are flowing down your face because of what this officer meant to you, and helped you deal with this, getting rid of this monster for you. Was that one of the first people in your life that really was there unequivocally to help you and protect you, Officer Couples?
Chad was he, I don't know if he was one of the first, but he was certainly one of the most important people in my life. He is one of the most important people in my life, especially given the time. I don't know if you could have sent a better person than Chad at that moment, for many reasons. Coincidentally, Chad and I knew kind of, I at least had known Chad. I'd seen him before. His wife was my teacher. I had seen him at the school a couple years prior, and so he was an Afghan Iraq veteran, and so he would come to school on like Memorial Days or Veterans Day or whatever, and kind of talk to us about his time in the service. And so when he walked in the hospital, like I recognized him, and like I saw his last name, and I was like, "Oh, your wife is like Mrs. Couples, right?" And he's like, "Yeah." And so aside from like this, just the pure coincidence of Chad kind of being the one that reported or that investigated my case, man, he, I just remember being so comfortable with him and open. And I remember him sitting down and telling me, like, "Seth, the more you tell me now, the less we'll have to do later." And I knew that I was going to punish this guy. Like, I knew that I was going to put this guy away by myself or with the help of others. Like, whatever it took, I was going to do it. And so I told Chad, like, those deep, dark, horrific stories. I told Chad the stories that in a way that I can't speak about in public because people wouldn't listen. I mean, that's just, there's a level of like, I think it needs to be heard in some places, but it's so disgusting that it will make you sick to your stomach to think about certain things, And so but Chad was such a powerful person in my life at a the most Well, arguably one of the most important points of my life, at just 15 years old, And so, yeah, I'm just, he was very, very important, and he's always going to be a part of the story for sure.
That's great. We only got a minute or two, Seth, and I want to make sure you're a father of two beautiful children.
That's right.
What do you want the people that's listening to, because we have a big audience, people that are listening tonight, number one, parents, what do they need to hear? And people that are going through this have gone through it and never got help yet. Those two individuals right now, if that you could eyeball them on the screen and they're watching you, what would you say first to the parents and then offer some hope to the people that have been victims. I want to hear your words to them.
To the parents, I would say love your children, love them deep and freaking hard, and build a connection with them, talk to them, be present, like just be present, like just be present and love them. Like I take fatherhood so seriously.
I
I mean,
bet you do.
every single decision I make, whether it's what breakfast we're eating, what we're doing, what playground we're going to, what bike I'm riding, what game I can play. Do I have 15 minutes where I can run upstairs and run around with them for a second and scare them or chase them or throw them or like, and then when it comes time for bed, like, it's like I go in there and I just put my kids to bed a little bit ago, and I go in there and I hug my son and I'm just like, got a hold of him. And I'm like, I love you so much. Like, I love you, man. And I tell him that over and over and over and over again. And like I said earlier, as far as it relates to me and my attachment to men and my life now, I mean, that stems from never having that. I have a mother wound and a father wound, you know? And so we don't recognize how important it is to be a parent, I think, until you've grown up without parents. And then you get that opportunity to love a child so deeply. It's so powerful. It's so, man, I love it. Being a father is my favorite thing. It's incredible, you know? To those who have gone through the abuse, the suffering, the pain, the trauma, to those who have gone through it, I would say, you know, you're okay. You're not alone. I know it feels that way. I felt that way. And I thought I was alone. I thought I was the only one that had gone through what I had gone through. I thought I was the only one who had endured like all the things that I had gone through. And as soon as I started sharing my story, I get messages and emails and comments almost every single day about like a me too, like me too. I went through it. Same thing. You've told my story. And I've gotten a lot of thank yous. I've gotten a lot of powerful messages. So I've begun to realize that like I'm not alone. And there are others out there just like me. And there are others out there with better or worse. And we're all going to get through this thing together, you know. But I think you have to make a decision. Like, I hope that anybody who's listening will wake up tomorrow and say, you know what? This guy, Seth, was able to go through all of this craziness in his life and was still able to come out on the other end and make a conscious effort, a conscious decision to like go and live a beautiful, powerful life. Therefore, I'm no longer going to let this cloud or like this thing of shame or of embarrassment, whatever it is, I'm no longer going to let this thing hold power over me. Like I'm going to get rid of it. It's not going to be my excuse bubble anymore. It's not going to be my like victim bubble anymore. I'm going to get out of this thing and I'm going to go live this beautiful life. I don't know what that looks like for anybody, but I'll tell you, for me, it's waking up every day and being damn proud that I have a wife and that I have children, that I have a career, that I have a home, that I'm able to do the things that I'm able to do every single day, no matter what it is. I am just happy to be here. I'm happy when I go to work tomorrow morning. The first thing I say to everybody is, "Hey, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be alive. It's a great day to be alive." Like there are bigger problems in the world, and I'm not letting this past, this dark past of mine, hold me down any longer, you know. And for the people that I see who do, I do feel for you. I have the empathy. I understand how hard it is. Like I'm not telling you these things like I got it out of a book and like here's a three-step process of how to heal. I'm telling you because like this is the things that I've learned throughout the process of my life. Like it is a process. You're going to have bad days, you're going to have good days. You've got to learn how to get through these things and just, you know, just keep going, because it's like I said earlier, the tragedy is not what we go through. It's this untapped potential to live a beautiful life despite all of the things that we've gone through. So that's my message to those who have gone through it.
Yeah. In the latter part of your book, you have this quote, I'm glad I'm the one who had to suffer through all of this. As we close out tonight, why are you glad that you're the one?
That's a great question. And
Did it make you a better person?
it may be the person I am today.
Yes, I have that right sticky note right above my desk. I am so glad I went through what I went through because it made me me.
And I wouldn't be here without, I don't know who I'd be, but I wouldn't be here without all of those things. But you know what's interesting about that quote is I'm glad that I was the one that went through everything, because I got through everything, but I would not wish that on anybody.
Yeah. And you made it through it.
That's
Yeah.
right.
And Seth, I want to thank you for being with us tonight. I want to have you come back on. I will contact you probably this week and say, hey, let's set another date, because I didn't even get through half of what I wanted to talk to you about. And I want to drill down deeper of into your resilience. I want to dig down deeper and drill down deeper into maybe your military experience. The military has huge problems, Seth, and you know that better than I do. But I hear so many horror stories on the other side of it that everything was fine until they went into the military and they're being hurt and abused in our United States military. And I want to get your scoop on that too. So next time around, we're going to talk about some other things. But this is the book, Strength Beyond Shadows. Do you have a copy of it right there? Mine's on Kindle. I can't show. Do you have one that you can?
I took them all outside.
Okay,
I
that's
got
okay.
a,
But you want to get this Strength Beyond Shadows and get it on Amazon right now. It's an awesome book. I highly recommend it to anybody. And it's one of those books that if you know somebody that's gone through it, buy two or three and hand it out to some of your friends that you know, because it's going to help them. Thank you so much for being with us tonight, Seth. And thanks for being the champion and having the strength that you do.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being on.
Yes,
And
sir.
Amazon's the best place to get it.
Yes, sir. Amazon. Yep, that's right.
And if people want to get in touch with you, they want you to come to their school. They want you to come teach their teachers. They want you to come teach their police departments. How do they get in touch with you, Seth, before we go?
SethGehl.com. So SethGehl.com. There is a booking tab on there if you want to contact me, that'll have all the info in there. I'm also on all the social media websites or whatever platforms. Just my name, Seth Gehl, you'll find me.
Okay, fantastic, Seth. Thanks for being with us tonight. We'll have you back.
Thank you.
God bless. Like we do each and every week, I always like to end the program with this, and I think Seth will agree this is the best way to offer any kind of in any kind of broadcast. And no matter what you've gone through, no matter what you're dealing with today, no matter what you're going to face tomorrow, I want to let you know Seth is a perfect example of this. I'm a living example of this too. No matter what, there's always hope. Hang in there. Fight for one more day and find the best that you can to make that day the best that you can, and never give up on hope. God bless you. Join us right here next week for another live edition of Breaking the Silence at 8 o'clock from Houston, Texas. God bless. Have an awesome week. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1. For the next episode of Breaking the Silence.